It's time for a look back on today's match. This is the Full Time Report with the voices of our Atlanta United, Mike Conti and Jason Longshore.
Atlanta United Soccer is brought to you by Equifax, The Home Depot, Mercedes-Benz, AT&T, Publix, Scana, Kauffman Tire, Lunazol, La Perea, Piedmont Healthcare, Heineken, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, and Associated Credit Union.
The home for MLS in Atlanta, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
So Atlanta United one step closer to the Supporters' Shield, essentially now in the CONCACAF Champions League for 2019. They have also clinched the right to host the MLS Cup Final should they qualify. All Western Conference clubs are eliminated from the Supporters' Shield race, all because Atlanta United beat New England Revolution today 2-1 here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The match was not as close as the final scoreline indicates. New England scored right at the death with Juan Agudelo, and then Atlanta United needed to see play out for another 15 seconds or so. But this was a coming-out party for a superstar in the making, we believe. 16-year-old George Bello of Douglasville, Georgia, no doubt our Heineken man of the match, scored in the 17th minute to give Atlanta United the 1-0 lead. It was a beautiful goal, Galazzo, I called it. But then if you look at what Opta credited with Bello with today, passed at 85%, won four tackles, drew a foul, created a chance, had the goal. Sixth youngest player in MLS history to score a goal, Jason, and this is going to be the first of many, I have a feeling.
I don't know about the goals, but first of many man-of-the-match performances for sure. Bello is a player that, you know, I've had a chance to see come up through the Atlanta United Academy under Tony Annan's direction. I've had a chance to see him with ATL UTD2 under Scott Donnelly's direction, and both of those guys have to be feeling pretty good right now, seeing Bello just not look at all out of place in this match today. You know, this wasn't his first match, this wasn't his first start, but this was his first 90-minute performance, and it was a complete performance. Defensively, he was strong. You mentioned the four tackles, two interceptions, blocked a shot. Just consistently cut things down on that side. And then he got forward, and he contributed. He nearly had an assist. It's called back for offside. He takes his chance, and he scores. He connected his passes really, really well. There were very few mistakes made in any facet of the match today by George Bello.
George Bello is our man of the match, brought to you by Heineken. George Bello is not old enough to drink a Heineken, but 5 years from now, he'll be able to drink that man of the match Heineken, I guess. Jeff Lorenowitz joining us now in the Atlanta United clubhouse. Jeff had a very busy day himself. Passed at 93%, won five tackles, which was a team high. And Jeff, it felt like a very, very chippy game this afternoon, one where you kind of had to hang on at the end. So it has to feel like a very gratifying 3 points today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, coming off of last week, we wanted to refocus and really take it each game. And we knew today was a tricky one. But I thought that we came out really well in the first half and took control of the game. And George obviously gets the goal, and we took it from there.
Something that really stood out to me was this was the same approach against a New England team that does like to press and tries to emulate what New York does a little bit. What worked better for you guys this week?
Well, I think that tonight, you know, all respect to New England, the Red Bulls are very, very good at what they do. We're obviously at home as well, so you'd have to think there's a bit of caution in the Revs team coming in. They didn't come up as high as Red Bulls did last week. But, again, I thought we were pretty patient the first half. The first 30 minutes or so, we moved the ball quickly and created openings. And like I said, you know, we got one. It felt like it could have been more in the first half. And then it ends 2-1, but, we were always in control.
In the 30th minute, we saw Miguel Almiron leave the game. Very emotional. Club says he has a left leg injury. Barco comes in, and I thought it was a testament to the veterans on this club, you among them, where you guys were kind of able to press on even without Miguel in a very emotional moment and see the first half out.
Yeah, I think that we obviously all really feel for Miguel. We're hoping that it's nothing too serious. I think he would have been emotional to leave the game, you know, with anything. So I don't think we can read too much into the emotion of it, but the team did come together. I think that Ezekiel came on and did a really good job in there. And, we're focused as a team on getting 3 points, taking it game by game. I thought it was a pretty solid, complete performance by everybody, and a very good example with Ezekiel stepping in replace for Miguel.
How has the adjustment been for you personally playing on the back line again in the 3-5-2 in recent weeks?
Yeah, it's certainly different. Obviously, from my normal spot, you know, you're asked to do different things, especially with keeping the ball and building from the back. But as each game comes by, it gets better and better, and I think that the team as a whole is kind of settling into that formation. You know, we started the year that way. It seemed like through the middle of the year we went back to four in the back, and now we're back in the three. But it's good to be versatile. It's good to be comfortable in different positions, so if the team needs me, I can step on.
Jeff, what does it tell you about this club that you are now 11-0-1 this season in matches following a loss or a draw?
Well, that's it. We have to refocus each week. I think that, you know, I'm not going to lie to you and say that we were focused on New England from Monday or Tuesday or even Wednesday. It was a difficult week because we knew how big the game was on Sunday. But we did refocus. We did come back together as a team. We focused on the positives. We had a few good days of training. And then, obviously, to come into our building in front of our fans and take care of business. You know, that's kind of the professional attitude that we want. It's the attitude that you're going to need to win the Supporter Shield and go into the playoffs with lots of confidence.
So here comes the final week off now before the postseason begins. Are you and McCann going back to Hilton Head?
Yeah, no, I think we're going to go down to Sandals, just the two of us.
Well, have a pina colada on me, I guess.
Yeah, bring your sunscreen.
Right. Jeff, well played today. Congratulations on the 3 points. You're closer to the Shield. You're closer to the record. It's been very, very fun watching it all unfold up here. Have a great rest of your Saturday.
You too. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Jeff Lorenowitz joining us down in the Atlanta United clubhouse. I think what Jeff said about the Miguel Almirón injury is extremely important because there has been a lot of speculation about Miguel's body language, the way everything looked when he came out of the park. I thought Jeff summed it up perfectly. And we see Joseph Martinez do this, too. Mm-hmm. As a player, you don't want to come out of the game at all,
nope.
Let alone after 30 minutes because of an injury.
We saw it last year at just about the same time frame exactly where there was an injury. Miguel missed a couple of games. He did not miss the playoffs. Everything was okay. We've been through this before. Miguel Almirón wants to play every minute that he can possibly play. He knew he was injured. He knew he was going to have to come out. He didn't know the severity. Let's relax a little bit. If he misses even a game, it's nothing to worry about. I don't think he's going to Paraguay.
Well, and I was just going to say, because you know I'm always a glass half full guy, as listeners to 92.9 The Game and my wife listening somewhere probably laughed. Glass half full. The same Miguel Almirón, a call-up to the Paraguayan national team for camp.
And for a training camp.
It's hard to get hurt in a training camp, but it can happen.
Yes.
So that's one less guy you have to worry about during the international break. And again, all the club has told us so far is that Miguel Almirón is being evaluated for a left leg injury. Jeff Lorenowitz didn't have much more information than that with us. Tata Martino will address the media later. If he expounds on that, we will let you know. As far as the final statistics are concerned, possession was 62-38 in favor of Atlanta United. Shots 13-11 Atlanta. Shots on goal 6-3 Atlanta United. The fouls, 20 fouls for New England, 5 for Atlanta United. But that's what you expect against the number one team in MLS in fouls. How about this? Atlanta United won 65% of the duels and passed at 86%. So statistically, and we know the style of play is a lot different, but this was a much, much different type of match than what we saw Sunday at New York Red Bulls.
It's a couple things Jeff said in our interview with him. New England did not press as high, and we talked about that during the first half. They were sitting a little bit deeper, but still trying to employ elements of the press that worked for the Red Bulls. They were not able to pull it off. You have to commit all the way to it. You can't half press, and that's kind of felt like where New England was. But Atlanta also, the big number that we talked about in the break, 54 long passes connected. And we talked about it all week about ways Atlanta can deal with a team that wants to press. Today, you saw it, and this is why Jeff Lorenowitz is playing on the back line right now. his ability to pass out of the back. We already know about Leandro Gonzalez-Perez and Michael Parkhurst passing out of the back. You saw those three, along with Brad Gazan, connect on 40-plus long passes today. LGP 13, Parkhurst 12, Gazan 11, Larenowitz 7. That gives you a way to play out of trouble and over trouble.
And it's the way Atlanta United wants to play, quite frankly.
Well, it's a different way, and that's the thing that was talked about a lot this week. So Atlanta United doesn't want to play direct. They don't want to play 50-50 balls down the middle of the field and let Joseph Martinez fight it out against guys who are 6 inches taller. That's not the game they want. They want long passes into the corners, down the wings, hitting a Bello, hitting a Gressel down the wing. That type of passing they do want, and you saw it today, and you saw how effective it can be.
All right, so Atlanta United with the 2-1 win over New England Revolution. We will have the highlights coming up after this. And once again, your feedback and your questions right now at Mike Conti 929, at Longshoe, and at ATL Soccer 929. Atlanta United, a couple points closer to the Supporter Shield. They beat New England Revolution 2-1, and we'll have more of the full-time report in a moment on Sports Radio 929, The Game.
The Mighty Blue Marlin. You've battled for two solid hours.
Back on the full-time report on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Boston is the conquered city today. So we come back with new addition as Atlanta United takes down New England Revolution 2-1 here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I've always kind of associated New Edition with Atlanta because of Bobby Brown. But in reality, this is a Boston-New England group.
They got their start in Boston, and this is Bobby solo on the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack.
Wow. Wow. That was a really bad sequel.
It was like, a bad sequel. It's a good soundtrack, though, because of that song.
Well, Rocky V had a great soundtrack, but that was an awful sequel.
Oh.
Boy, on the Mount Rushmore of terrible movie sequels, Ghostbusters 2 would be right up there, along with Iron Eagle 2, also known as Aces.
Wow.
Caddyshack 2, Oren is absolutely correct.
That's so bad that it's in a whole different category,
They couldn't even get the cast to come back for it. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
Caddyshack 2 is a great pull. If you have any other suggestions, go ahead and tweet us at Mike Conti 929, at Longshoe, and at ETL Soccer 929. John Nelson in the back.
Blues Brothers 2000.
Ooh. Is an outstanding pull.
That's horrendous.
Blues Brothers 1 was also not very good. Grease 2? They made a Grease 2?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Michelle Pfeiffer was in it? What is going on?
Conti's mind is blown now.
Well, I mean, this is why I don't subscribe to Cinemax, apparently. I don't get to see all these sequels. Anyhow, Atlanta United's sequel performance against New England Revolution this year goes a lot better than the first, although there was one eerie similarity. At the end, a late goal totally against the run of play by New England, but this time Atlanta United had the 2-0 lead as opposed to the 1-0 lead. And that takes us into the highlights. Atlanta United, I thought, really, first 15, 20 minutes, complete domination of the match, complete match control. New England barely having possession in the first 15 or 20 minutes. And then here comes the goal, and it's George Bello's first career MLS goal. You know it is the hot play of the match, brought to you by Scana. LGP takes the free kick quickly, bounces it down to Bello on the edge of the 18. He'll walk in and shoot! Score! The first career MLS goal for George Bello! And it's a golazo in the 17th minute! So George Bello dribbling in on Brad Knighton, and I'll go back to the ice hockey term I used at halftime. He beat Knighton to the short side, Knighton and the near post, and he found a little bit of a gap. Knighton got a little bit of a piece of it, but it was a beautiful goal, a very confident strike by George Bello, and that gave Atlanta United the 1-0 lead.
You can't give up a goal at the near post. There's nothing to take away from Bello's strike. It's a good ball over the top from Leandro Gonzalez-Perez. Bello with a nice touch, settles it, hits the half volley, hits it hard with a little bit of swerve too, but you can't give up a goal at the near post. It's one of the cardinal sins of goalkeeping, and Knighton makes a mistake there.
So Atlanta United, a very good first 20, 25 minutes. Jeff Lorenowitz even validated that. He said first half hour, very good. But then at the half hour mark, we had Miguel Almiron go down, and we still really don't know what happened. He went down behind the play. The one replay we saw from Univision made it look like there was no contact.
Yeah, I don't think the injury happened there. I think it happened before. I'm not sure where. I'll have to dig back into the match a little bit, but looks like the injury happened. He tried to play through it, and at that point he knew, okay, I need to come out.
And he did, and Ezequiel Barca replaced him. And the final 15 minutes of the first half was controlled by New England Revolution. Atlanta United kind of hanging on to get to halftime, though right at the end of the half, they did create two chances that they did not convert. And that took us into the second half. And what has been the sweet spot all year for Atlanta United in terms of time of goal scored? Between minutes 46 and 60. And it happened again for the Five Stripes today with Julian Gressel converting in the 52nd minute. Left to right, free kick by Guzan. It's going to fall all the way down to Villalba in the right attacking third. He'll dribble parallel to goal, leave it through to Gressel. His shot, score! And Gresselmania goes running wild through New England Revolution. It's 2-0 to the Five Stripes. So a very pretty assist by Tito Villalba. And Tito now has a really good chance to get to double-digit assists on the year. It's 9 for him now. Gressel's fourth goal. And one of the kind of quiet stories of the last month for Atlanta United has been the goal-scoring punch now from Julian Gressel, and it comes again there.
Just the combination between the two. It's a ball from Guzan, and it falls to Tito. Tito is able to beat a couple players off the dribble, but he also has that sixth sense. He knows that Gressel's making the run. And you go back and watch this one. Gressel fights through hand-checking from Kellen Rowe, trying to slow him down because Kellen Rowe knows that he's in a very bad spot there and he can't keep up with Julian Gressel. Gressel just runs through him and then Villalba slips it into him. It's a great work from Tito Villalba. It's a great run by Gressel about 30, 40 yards off the ball. And then the finish into the far side netting.
And then from there, Atlanta United with a 2-goal lead, very patient. Didn't really have to come forward a whole lot. I don't want to say they sat on the lead because that has a negative connotation, but they certainly did not play with a ton of urgency. They did not need to. Right at the death, they give up a long ball over the top by Fagundes that's walked into the net by Agudelo, but really with only 15 seconds left in the match, so Atlanta United did not have to worry too much about seeing it out, and they get the 2-1 win.
Remember, Joseph Martinez had two chances that Brad Knighton made excellent saves on, so it wasn't like Atlanta stopped playing. Brad Knighton kept it to 2-0, and then they get the goal with about 15 seconds left. It's a beautiful chip from Diego Fagundes, and Agudelo finishes it well. My question for Brad Friedel is, why are these guys not starting? These are two of your more talented attacking players, and yes, you've got a lot of good attacking players. That hasn't been the issue for New England, but to me, Fagundes and Agudelo are two guys that you should be building around, not leaving on the bench in these moments at this point in the season.
So 2-1 is the final scoreline, and let's go through all this again. Atlanta United, that's their 20th win of the year. That ties the MLS record for wins in the non-shootout era. 66 points, so they are now 3 points shy of tying the MLS record for points earned in a season. They have two matches to go. Atlanta United needs one more point or 1 point dropped by New York Red Bulls in their final three matches to go to the CONCACAF Champions League in 2019. I think you can punch your ticket now for Guadalajara or San Jose, Costa Rica, wherever we're going to be going in February. That's going to happen. Atlanta United now needs a combination of 6 points earned or points dropped by New York Red Bulls to win the Supporters' Shield. If the Red Bulls were to lose tonight to San Jose Earthquakes, we would come back here on Sunday, October 21st, and Atlanta United would have a chance to clinch the Shield with a win, and Red Bulls losing to Philadelphia Union. Those matches will be played simultaneously. Anything short of that, and this would go to the final weekend up in Toronto. Also, Atlanta United has now clinched the right to host the MLS Cup final should they qualify. You might be a little curious. Wait a minute, FC Dallas could still get to 66 points. They can, but they cannot get to 20 wins. So Atlanta United will host the MLS Cup final on Saturday, December 8th, if they advance. Only Red Bulls and Atlanta United can host the MLS Cup final now. I know what you're saying. Wait a minute. There's the high school football championships on December 8th. Well, just like the expansion draft, you don't have to panic about this, folks, because there is a contingency plan to move the high school state football championships, if necessary, to accommodate the MLS Cup final.
Ed Sheeran moved, too, for the playoffs.
I saw that, yes. Ed Sheeran, there's going to be a playoff match here on November 11th. Ed Sheeran's now going to the 9th. Ed Sheeran, being British, I'm sure he's a big soccer fan. Maybe he'll stick around and watch Atlanta United.
Maybe we can get him on the Five Stripes Countdown.
We had Jeezy today, and he was great.
Jeezy was awesome.
Yeah, man, we get Ed Sheeran on. That'll help our viewership a lot with the younger demographic. Looks like right now Atlanta United is going to open the playoffs against one of these teams: New York City, Montreal Impact, Columbus Crew, Philadelphia Union, or DC United. If Atlanta United is to get the number one seed, they will play the lowest surviving seed in that group. Impact got a big, big win today, 3-0 over Columbus Crew, which gives them a little bit of breathing room, but DC United still controls their own destiny to get the sixth seed. We will come back with your questions and your feedback one more time. Send them to at Longshoe at ATL Soccer 929 and at Mike Conti 929. By the way, Juan Agudelo cost the fine folks at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta $2,000 today. Hope you're happy about that, Juan, because Atlanta United wants to remind you that with each Atlanta United clean sheet this year, they donate $2,000 to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. This year's donation total, $16,000. Someone tweeted us and said, if you score at the death like that to blow a clean sheet, you should make the donation. Ball's in your court, Juan Agudelo. Back with more in a moment on the Full-Time Report. 2-1 Atlanta United over New England Revolution on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Pump music, Aerosmith of Boston, Mass. 2-1 Atlanta United over New England Revolution this afternoon. Before we get to your questions and feedback on the match, Jason and myself and Jimmy Vance and John Nelson, we've been having a spirited discussion here in the booth about the worst sequels of all time, because we played a song off the seldom heard Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack to come in out of our first break. Have we reached consensus that what's the Saturday Night Fever sequel? Staying Alive?
Yes.
That's got to be on that list as just absolutely god-awful sequels. Jason and I have a major debate on Breaking It 2 Electric Boogaloo. Jason is on the pro-Electric Boogaloo side. I'm on the anti.
I am on the pro Special K and Boogaloo Shrimp side, yes.
Okay. If you would like to expound on that, you can. Otherwise, we'll just
I've seen those movies far too many times. Yeah. I think I checked out the VHS tapes from Turtles when I was a kid every other weekend.
Did they make a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2? Why do I feel like they did? Because they tried to really squeeze that fruit for a while in the early 1990s. I feel like maybe they did. Anyhow, I'm sure the guys on Soccer Down Here will probably get to this on Wall Pass Wednesday or down the road. We do have an update on Miguel Almiron, so let's peel out of that, get a little more serious. And thank you, Jimmy Vance. Jarrett Smith of 92.9 The Game is reporting that Miguel Almiron is having tests done and that Tata Martino says it may be a muscle injury. I'm not a doctor, but that's not surprising because Miguel was able to walk off under his own power. There was nothing that made you think a ligament injury, a bone bruise, or a sprain or anything like that. So we'll just wait and see. It's going to be 2 weeks before Atlanta, 2 weeks and a day before Atlanta United plays again. It is, I think, somewhat fortunate their next opponent is Chicago, which is a side that you probably can take care of at home without Miguel Almiron. You might want to have Miggy in Toronto because he might have the shield on the line there. That's 3 weeks away. A lot of time for this to sort itself out. We won't speculate beyond that. Atlanta United was going into a week off anyway. We'll just kind of wait and see. But that's the latest we have from downstairs from Tata Martino, Jared Smith of 92.9 The Game reporting that Miguel Almiron is having tests done. It appears to be a muscle injury, and we do know from what the club told us earlier, it is the left leg they're concerned about. All right, let's get to your questions and your feedback now. Ed Million says, really good in the first half, a bit sloppy in the second, especially letting in that final goal with passing not as crisp. Bella was outstanding, paced himself better. Plenty of time until the playoffs for Miggy to heal and Barco to step up. On the last point about Barco, you know who led the team in fouls drawn today? And he only played 60 minutes? Ezekiel Barco had 5. He did his job again today.
He did. What he does, I think so many people, when you see Barco get loose on the dribble, you expect Barco to just run at people, beat them 1v1, and make a highlight reel and create a chance that way. What Barco does that, honestly, I don't think there's another player in Major League Soccer who does it this way, is he dribbles to pull the defense apart. You look at him so many times where he dribbles across the grain, he dribbles across the field, pulling defenders with him, because when he takes off on a dribble, it's not just one guy chasing him usually, it's two, sometimes it's three, pulling everything apart. He's so good at slipping a pass then and taking advantage of the space. That's where I think Barco comes into play. But what was interesting to me, and this is something as I watch the game back, I want to look deeper at, I thought his play, he plays the 10 so differently than Miguel Almiron. But his positioning and also that movement off the ball, it created more opportunities and more space for Darlington Nagbe to step into and for Tito Villalba to drop into.
You mentioned him playing the 10 a little bit differently than Almiron, and that feeds into a two-pronged question from Scott Moore. He wants to know, is it going to be Bello or Garza at left wing back going forward? And then where does Atlanta United go filling in for Almiron until he comes back?
I feel like George Bello has pushed way ahead of schedule in terms of what his minutes are going to be. You know, this was a player that, like I said, I've seen in the academy, I saw with ATL UTD2 at the beginning of the season, and I really did not want the hype train to get going too fast because of his age. You want him to be able to ease into it. Well, at this stage, when you're talking about a potential championship year, you're past easing into anything.
Yep.
Bello's taken the most of his opportunities. Greg Garza is a veteran. Greg Garza is a very important piece of this team. If he's healthy, I think he's the guy. But if he's not healthy, I think it's really hard to pull George Bello off the field right now.
What about for Almiron?
I think in the 3-5-2, and when we talk to Jeff Lorenowitz, it feels like that's where the team is most comfortable right now. I like Barco as that 10 with Tito as the 9.5 with Joseph Martinez. I think that combination works really well, and Darlington Nagbe being part of it, it just creates, I think, a more natural space for Nagbe to step forward into. I think Nagbe is a little reluctant to do it with Miguel because Miguel covers so much ground. He wants to let Miguel be Miguel. Barco is a little bit more of a traditional 10, and he's going to drift to the left a little bit. That's where he's naturally, you know, comfortable. So Nagbe creates more, he's more impactful, I think, with Barco.
I wonder if Atlanta United had clinched something by now, and they would have clinched Supporters Shield today had they beaten Red Bulls. I wonder if that would have given Carlton a window in what would have been two meaningless matches to end the year, a chance to start at the number 10. I don't think you can do it now because you need to get 6 points out of these matches.
Yeah, I don't know, because I think now you're still looking at refining a little bit. It feels like the team is most comfortable in the 3-5-2, so I think they're going to look for the different elements of it. Gressel playing centrally. We saw that today. He's been so good out wide, but he is a good player centrally. There's a little bit of concern about the turnover centrally at times. We had one today that was a little shocking. But Franco Escobar came in, and I thought made the most of his opportunities going forward. So it's more about finding, okay, you are the top team in the league right now on the standings. You have a potential to be the best team in league history. You're looking for those little margins of getting better, the differences in a playoff series.
Keeping in mind that twice in the second half, Brad Knighton stoned Joseph Martinez at point-blank range. William Childs wants to know, what do we need to do to help Joseph?
Just keep feeding him. Just keep feeding him when he has the opportunities. I think Joseph, maybe in the second half, he was looking for his own chance a little bit more than we've seen lately, and that's completely fine. After you got the second goal, that's where the game is at that point. You can be a little selfish. And I thought Joseph, not in a bad way at all, he's a forward. Forwards are supposed to be selfish. That's their nature. He went for a couple of chances. The one where he just kept spinning Michael Mancian around, it's good to see that Mancian was able to get up and walk off under his own power, because I was a little worried about him after that. Martinez just embarrassed him, and that's the highest-paid defender in Major League Soccer.
Right. Ricky Ricardo says, bello, 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 that kid is sink. Also, even under unfortunate circumstances, I hope this game will kill all of the Barco isn't good talk because he was instrumental today.
It won't. It won't, because Barco is not your typical player. It's just Barco, there's not a lot of players like him. And he does things that I think people are just not used to. Mm-hmm. He plays the game. He sees the game in a way that is not typical. And I think that's part of what makes him special. I think here in Atlanta, he has been the third, fourth, fifth option at times in this team, and he was coming from a team at Independiente that he took to a continental title in South America where he was the number one option. That's an adjustment. That's an adjustment for a teenager. We know about everything that has gone on with Ezequiel Barco in the last year. It's been a crazy year for that guy, and he's still stepping into a moment like that where Miguel Almiron goes down injured, is just completely shaken at that point. Barco came in and righted the ship and kept this team moving forward in a good way. I thought Barco was outstanding today.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not like coming out of a bullpen where you get a couple pitches to warm up and the umpire gives you all the time you need. You're coming in ice cold. I don't even think the outfield players had gone to stretch yet that point of the match. David Franklin, I saw dominance today and good job by Bello, but Gresselmania deserves honorable mention. Julian Gressel puts the ball spot on. Dude is sure-footed.
Yeah, I think Gressel out wide, and I do think that going forward, the back line that we saw with the question about Bello and maybe Garza, I think Gressel out wide as a right wing back is important. Now, in matches where you see Gressel tested in a big way defensively, I wonder if that's where you might see a Franco Escobar and maybe Gressel slotting inside, but Gressel's passing is just on another level, and that's another option for the 10 if Miguel is out for any extended period of time. We've seen Gressel play as a 10 before. It takes him a little bit further away from his own goal centrally, where some of those passes, he can take some chances out wide. You can't take as many chances centrally when you're playing as an 8. You have to change your mindset. You get the best out of Gressel when he does take those chances going forward because he's such a great passer.
Kevin McLaughlin, I thought it was a bit cheap, all the physical shots New England took at Atlanta players. They are playing for nothing. By the way, that's not true. Atlanta playing for everything. That is true. Should the ref have called it closer, or am I off base?
I thought the ref should have called it a little differently as the game went on. When it became completely obvious in the second half that New England had no way to stop Atlanta as they were starting to break, 13 fouls in the second half alone from New England, 20 fouls on the day, 5 fouls committed by Atlanta United. It's a different style. It's a different approach. And if the referee is going to allow teams to play Atlanta physically, they should, because it's really the only way to stop them at times. And New York did it a lot last week as well. New England did it, I think, maybe a little less artfully today, a little more cynically. And there were so many shots after the ball was played. That was my issue. It wasn't so much the fouls when you're beaten and you have to commit a foul. You have to do that sometimes. But it was after a pass was delivered, a hit to Barco or a hit to Almiron or a hit to Gonzalez Perez. That happened a lot today.
And we'll end with this from Gustavo, who, quite frankly, saw the game a little bit differently than we saw it today, which is unusual. Gustavo says Atlanta United didn't make any revolution, just a little riot to deactivate New England defenses. Bello waved our flag, but with trembling arms, our guns had few bullets in the chamber. So the Revs kept their uniforms, and we lost one of our Patriots, Miguel Almiron, with no bars and 5 stripes flashiness.
I think Gustavo might still be down a little bit about Independiente being knocked out of the Copa Libertadores by River Plate. I think he might still be a little down from that. I saw the game a little differently. I thought Atlanta was in more control. I'm kind of more along the lines of what Jeff Lorenowitz said to us earlier in the full-time report. Just it felt like Atlanta controlled the match. It felt like New England really didn't have a ton going forward. They didn't really... They had no shots on goal in the first half. They had 3 in the second half, and most of those, I think, were after it was 2-0. I think New England hung around after it was 2-0. You know, Knighton kept them in it, but it never felt like a match where I was worried about Atlanta dropping points. I think they did their job and took care of things.
Most critically, we've had a couple people tweet at us to confirm that they did make a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Oh, I had texts about it. People were giving it me directly.
Well, are you aware that Vanilla Ice was on that soundtrack?
Oh, yes.
I did not know this. I didn't know the movie existed or that Vanilla Ice was on it, but
Oh, was that Ninja Rap?
Oh, Ninja Rap, yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles performed at the 1990 Blockbuster Bowl halftime show, Penn State and Florida State. And they, that's right, this is it. This is exactly what they performed, Ninja Rap. And on that note, we'll take one final break. When we come back, we'll look ahead to the next Atlanta United match, 2 weeks from tomorrow against Chicago Fire. Yeah, we won't play Marky Mark on the full-time report, but we'll play this, huh? 2-1 Atlanta United over New England Revolution. More in a moment on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's the Green Machine, gonna rock the town without being seen. Have you ever seen a turtle get down? Slamming and jamming to the new swing sound. Yeah, everybody knows.